And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast live from straight up Arctic Toronto, Canada, where this is becoming an annual tradition where we are thrilled to be joined by two of the best and smartest and funniest and everything Raptors observers, Bruce Arthur from the Toronto Star, Eric Kareen from The Athletic, and we're going to talk Raptors and what is apparently called tobogganing and not sledding and many other things. How are you guys doing?
I'm just excited for the great weather of the 2016 All-Star Weekend to be back for another NBA kingpin and Zach Lowe.
It's not as cold as it was during the All-Star Weekend. Like, the joke about the All-Star Weekend is that was the coldest weekend in Toronto in like 40 years. So this isn't as bad. It's just thoroughly unpleasant.
And by the way, I think we probably did this rant last year. Everyone whined about that. You're outside for 6 minutes combined over 4 days of All-Star Weekend. Stop whining. And it was cold in New York. Toronto is a great All-Star host, and it should have another All-Star within the next 10 years, period.
The only problem with All-Star Weekend is that if you're a woman wearing a short skirt, that was not your weekend. Like, if you're there for the party scene, that 6 minutes outside is frostbite territory.
That's, you know what? My initial statement revealed a lack of empathy, actually. Yeah. And you just called me out on that right here on my own podcast.
Welcome to Canada.
Get out of your own skin, Zach.
Let's talk about the Raptors, because we're in Canada. We'll talk about some other stuff. The Raptors are 23-9 after a weirdly stinky loss last night in Dallas, in which they ceded their perch as the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. They have a point differential of 8.5 points a game positive, which is by far the best in the East. Boston is 4-9. Cleveland, which has been not trying for half the season and still winning a lot, is 3.4. Their net rating, I think, is like third in the league. I will check that now.
Yeah, Houston and Golden State are ahead of them.
Right. Behind two juggernauts, although the Rockets are on a three-game losing streak. It has been popular in the past year or two to call the Raptors Clippers East as sort of the good to very good team that could never get over the hump, although they, of course, have advanced around further and than the Clippers ever did. And I've always sort of rejected that comparison because I just never thought that a Raptors team, no matter how far they advanced in the playoffs, was qualitatively as good by any macro measure or even the eye test is the best Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, Clippers teams. Nor did they have a playoff series win over any team within the universe of the 2015 Spurs that the Clippers eliminated in like an epic seven-game series. This team is the first one that actually profiles through 32 games as like about that good of a team. I believe their net rating is better than any of those of the Clippers teams. This is my long way of saying, either of you can take this, is this the best Raptors team of this era? Or take it the other way, should we be saying we should be most confident of this team in the playoffs of any Raptors team?
I think there are a number of factors that lead it to me to answer yes with like five Ys or would they be E's?
I think E's.
First of all, I think the East is more susceptible than it's ever been. I would still favor the Cavaliers and not think twice about that. But you've got the Celtics, who lost one of their best players, if not their best player, on the first day of the season. And that's, you know, if the Cavs were 1 and the Raptors were 2A, the Celtics were 2B, or some order, most people would have Boston ahead of them. And the way that the Raptors are playing, they talked about it a lot, but it really has changed. Their offense looks different. DeMar DeRozan is distributing with more of a purpose. And Kyle Lowry, after his early season struggles, is playing, you know, his total complete brand of basketball, that, you know, he affects the game in just so many ways. The thing that's going to stop people is, as weird as it sounds, to make a lot of a loss like the loss in Dallas, where they just basically shot poorly and didn't get some 50-50 balls, and it was an oddly officiated game, is there was a very physical defender on DeMar DeRozan and Wes Matthews that shut down a lot of their initial offense, and the ball wasn't quite moving as crisply, and not that they didn't know what to do, but, you know, you've seen that movie before. It's called Game One of every single playoff series they've ever played. So there's always going to be, let's wait and see what happens once the real games start and once the rotations go from, you know, 10 to 8 and 7. And especially with young guys who have trouble shooting, a lot of them, which we'll get into in a bit, I'm sure, we have to see how those secondary playmakers on the Raptors can respond to the traps and the blitzes that are coming for DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, the way I would put it is this is the best Raptors team of all time and maybe by a lot, and it's probably not good enough to be a great NBA team. Like I said back when Boston was having their great start, I said this team, I think the Raptors are going to have the best record in the East. And I said that partly because, like, if Gordon Hayward were playing, we're having a different conversation right now. But this team is so deep, like just absurdly deep, that over a regular season with a 10-man rotation where Dwayne Casey's done a really nice job of mixing and matching and figuring out what works on a given night, this team is really good. The only other team in the top 10 in offensive rating and defensive rating, there's two other teams in the top 10, and they're the two teams that are better than them in net rating. It's Golden State and Houston. Like, the Raptors are killing Dallas loss notwithstanding, killing a lot of bad teams. They're being really professional night to night. The way they're playing faster. They're passing the ball more. The way the bench has kind of fits together. This is a really good team. This is almost as good a team as you can build without a true top 10 superstar. And that's where we go, we don't know what they're going to do in the playoffs. And that's where we say, these guys still aren't the threat to LeBron and the Cavs that they maybe could be, because as good as DeRozan has gotten, and he's proven me wrong over and over and over again, and as good as Kyle Lowry is, and as good as the bench is, they still don't have a guy who you can't stop. And that's the NBA. You need to have those guys to get to the highest level. So you can, this Raptors team may max out its potential. But its ceiling is not as high as a team with LeBron. That's the NBA for it.
Yeah, I'm actually very interested to see their next, starting tonight against the Thunder, and accepting their Hawks game on Friday, which a couple of us will be at. Bruce has hockey duty. The World Juniors are sweeping this region.
Carter Hart, baby.
Canada finally has a goalie. It's a big deal.
You can't produce a goalie here?
We haven't had a world... This is not a basketball thing. But
I don't care. The World Junior Hockey Championships have defined indirectly my last five visits to Toronto in the winter. Yeah, Thank God they're not in Toronto this year.
Except that I was in Buffalo last night. The arena was half full because they put part of the World Junior Tournament in Toronto two of the last 3 years. Then they put it back in Buffalo, which they had it there in 2011.
The lesson is you can only have the World Junior Hockey Championships so far away from Toronto.
Well, you couldn't have them in like Helsinki.
Oh, they do that. They go over there.
But, I was in Malmo, Sweden a few years back.
Malmo, Ufa, Russia. But they don't care the way we care.
Okay.
And they don't spend the way we spend. So it's always one of the reasons Canada used to win all the time is they would have it here. They would have it on the border towns. And we also produce great hockey players. We're in a bit of a rut right now. We have won gold medal since 2009 or 10.
You're talking about World Juniors.
So okay. Under 20.
Right.
But Canada hasn't produced goalies in a long time. It's one of the flaws in our system. Carey Price was the best goalie in the world for a while, and his World Junior was 2007. Steve Mason he's a decent goalie. He was 2008. We haven't produced World Junior goalies since then. Are any good?
Can Nash correct us? Can we get Steve Nash into the Canadian hockey program? Correct all this.
He's busy teaching Kevin Durant one-legged floaters.
How about Triano discovering a rule that nobody? Did you see this?
No.
Triano discovered, according to him, Triano has been the Canada basketball national team coach for a while. Or not? Is he now?
He is now,
right?
But he can't coach the qualification tournament.
They were tied in Phoenix with 0.6 seconds left. And he instructed Dragan Bender throwing the inbounds pass to just shoot the ball, and Tyson Chandler would just alley-oop it into the net.
Mm-hmm.
But he says 15 years ago, he discovered in the rule book that there's a loophole, which is, or maybe it's not a loophole, I don't know, that you cannot be called for offensive interference on an inbounds pass, because an inbounds pass is by definition not a shot. It can't be a shot that goes in. So he told Tyson Chandler, look, man, it doesn't matter if the ball is like over the cylinder, just whap it in. So he, Dragan Bender perfectly executes the pass. Tyson Chandler just literally tips it downward into the cylinder. The Grizzlies go crazy. No, yeah, it was in Phoenix against the Grizzlies. J.B. Bickerstaff goes nuts making the cylinder thing with his hand. And Jay Triano's like, no, I've been waiting 15 years to unleash this on an unsuspecting public. I might vote him coach of the year, like third place, just for that.
It's really too bad that waiting 15 years for this, like, you found something nobody else did. You had the ace in the hole. He should have a copy of the rule in his back pocket for, like, to show to the referees when this happens. And the best moment you could find to do it is not like game seven of a playoff series. It's not to get into the playoffs. It's a December game against Memphis. It's still great. Like Jay Triano, one thing with Jay Triano, I would watch Jay Triano's trick shot.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
Video. Jay Triano's trick shot master.
Really?
One of Canada's greatest players.
They were, when the Suns came to town recently, DeMar DeRozan was sort of telling old Triano stories. And the Raptors' old practice facility was in the upper level of the Air Canada Center. And Triano would apparently find one spot on the floor, and there's six baskets in the practice facility. And he went like 5 for 6 from the same spot on the floor in like all the baskets around the gym. So he stood in the same place and he'd like hit the one closest to him and then hit the one like diagonal
literally,
across the
gym.
Literally,
so not the same place relative to each basket.
No,
just the same place.
Spot. On the floor, exactly. Like, he did not move.
Wow.
He would practice shots where you bounce it off the wall and back to the hoop, or shoot, like, two balls at the same time. He does that one. I remember watching Jay in, like, 1993, I want to say, win the BC 3-on-3 tournament when he was, like, 30-something. And him and a couple buddies went and just killed everybody, because Jay is a killer shooter.
I wonder if he's, like... I think he's married, right? Is he married? Do you think he's like talked to his wife about this play or like his lover? Do you think he's like, man, I'm waiting for the honey. Did I tell you about the rule book thing I discovered? Yes, we've had that conversation many times.
I wonder
before.
If he told his assistants. Cause like, what if he can't use it until the assistants are on another team and they're like, watch out for the offensive goaltending
play.
You gotta keep that to yourself.
Did anyone ask him what the play's called? I'm sure he had to have named it. It should be called the Triano from now on.
I wouldn't tell anybody. Like, how often does this happen in life? That you discover a loophole in the rule that nobody, not the greatest minds that have ever studied the game, ever found and implemented. That's
awesome. And you use it to beat the Grizzlies, who I believe are...
Wait. I know why he did it. Vancouver.
Oh.
Payback for Vancouver. Finally, we are avenged.
Well, the Grizzlies dropped to 10-24 with that pivotal loss last night.
That'll teach them.
Still holding fast to not trading Marc Gasol or Mike Conley. Anyway, why I'm interested, I don't know how the hell we got on this.
It was awesome. I saw it. I was like, that's never happened before. I was transfixed by it. That's why we're talking about
here
it.
Here are Toronto. So Toronto was 11-7. The Raptors were 11-7. Nice team. Cute team. 11-7. They're now 23-9, which means they're 12-2 in 14 games. It's possible, unlikely, but it's possible if things broke the right way in the standings, that they have not faced a single playoff team or a team that will end up in the playoffs in any of those 14 games. I would say that's unlikely because Indiana is a win in that span. They'll probably make it. Philly is now 3-under, and they beat them twice in that span. But everyone else is dog crap. Sacramento, Phoenix, Charlotte. You know, Dallas, they lost to Clippers without everybody, although they lost that game too. Some, how the hell did they lose to the Clippers? I didn't watch that game.
There's too many games.
Was that an afternoon game in LA or something?
It was a back to back, but it was like a 3:30 on Sunday, 10:30 on Monday. So it wasn't like a 24-hour back to back. Mirza came back. Teletovic.
Milos.
Teletovic.
So there's so
Teodosic. Thank you very much. he came back and hit like an improbable shot down the stretch.
Oh, I do remember that. Yes.
It was a dog crap. How many times are we going to say dog crap on this podcast? it wasn't a good game. It was a lot like last night's game from what I remember.
So their next games are tonight at Oklahoma City, who is rolling, then home against the Hawks, whatever. Bucks, Bulls. Bulls are 8-2 in their last 10. Bucks at Nets. Okay, the DeMarre Carroll. Did DeMarre Carroll take revenge yet?
No, he did not play. DNP rest.
So you know that revenge game is coming.
He was dressed well, though.
He took his revenge by speaking the truth about last year's team and forcing them to talk about it. That's what he did.
Yeah, yeah. And then it gets fun. Miami, Cleveland, Golden State, Philadelphia, Detroit, who will now be missing Reggie Jackson for 6 to 8 weeks. Ugh. San Antonio, Minnesota. So it's going to get interesting. We're going to learn how real the Raptors are. But you guys think they're pretty real, and I think they're pretty real too. And the one guy that really changed this team, did anyone think OG Anunoby was going to be a starter playing at this level? Like, it was all like, is Norm going to start? Is CJ going to start? And like, Anunoby is just, he's just flat better than those guys.
Well, I don't think they were thinking he was going to play at this point.
No.
Because of the ACL surgery. Like,
that's
maybe
true.
He's coming back in December or January, maybe late November. But nobody, you know, the preseason conversation was definitely Norm or CJ Miles in the starting lineup. And they loved OG, who just, people are looking for a nickname for OG and they're playing on like, what's it? And the guy in Star Wars.
Anakin?
No, his mentor.
Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Yeah, yeah. So they're like trying to tie it in to Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Okay.
His nickname. His name is OG.
I mean, it's done. Got a nickname.
That's it.
Anyway, that's just a pet. I love ragging on Air Canada Center game ops.
Well, the fun thing is, okay, so look in the context of this team and look at all the guys on this team. One of the great things about the NBA is that some players can become drastically better by learning how to shoot. Like that simple idea of mastering this one mechanic, all of a sudden you become quantifiably different. And the Raptors have like a whole list of guys like that, who if they learn to shoot, the rest of their games would become so much more powerful. Like guys like DeLon Wright, guys like Pascal Siakam. OG Anunoby can already shoot. So his floor, the worst he's going to be, is a 3-and-D guy and there are people in the organization who still don't think he's healthy. Like, he's not up to full strength in terms of his body. Yeah.
His burst at the rim is just not where you would think it would be.
No, and that's going to come. And he's going to learn how to defend better, and he's going to figure out that aspect of the NBA because guys figure that out. So your baseline on him is that he's a really useful NBA player, and then we get to find out what else he can add. Right, the fact that he can catch and shoot and he can stand still shoot now, we've seen flashes of a floor game, we've seen flashes of basketball IQ. Like he makes this team better the way Patrick Patterson did a little bit when he was here.
And the thing we didn't think, I mean, the shooting has been outrageous, and I don't think he's been very good the last few games, but we'll see where that ends up. I would expect he'll end up in 36, 37,
47%
something like that.
On corner threes right now.
Yeah, that's good. They'll take that. but his passing just sort of came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Like, he can't really handle right now, but he can take a dribble and then make a pass that gets him the hockey assist, basically, that I don't think people
He can attack a closeout, take two dribbles, and then, like make the next pass really well.
Yeah, and that's a complete surprise to me, and I think probably to the team at large.
There are guys on this team who still can't do that, right? Like Norm Powell doesn't really do that.
Norm Powell's got one gear. Norm Powell is going to the basket.
And what does that show, right? Like OG he can see the game a little bit. And that's something, if you can expand, that's what every player tries to do, is kind of max out all your different gears. OG's got the gears to at least try it. And that's what's interesting about him, because for this team, think about how do you get better if you never draft too high and you don't attract like the monster free agents. If you want to become elite, you either find a Kawhi Leonard or a Giannis, or you attract one, right? Like, and they haven't managed to kind of, the guys they've drafted are good, but not great. OG probably You could argue he has the highest ceiling of all the guys they're developing right now.
Well, their starting lineup, he has stabilized the whole rotation, yeah. And now he's been so good that with Miles back, he's going to create, with Miles back and Van Vliet playing so well, they now have, serious is a little bit of an exaggeration, but they now have real questions about who is going to lose minutes, and I don't, right now it's Miles, and that just might be because he's just coming back, maybe it's Powell, but anyway, their starting lineup, 120 points per 100 possessions, 100 points allowed per 100, just slaughtering. And like all this, there was all this like Ibaka and Valanciunas lineups haven't played well since they traded for Ibaka. Like maybe they're too slow. And like those are still real questions, but that lineup is just destroying everybody.
And I think that's where the schedule comes into play,
right?
Because OG and Anobi didn't come into the starting lineup until I think they were playing Houston, or DeLon Wright hurt himself against New Orleans, I should say. Anyway.
Well,
Norm Powell hurt himself and OG came in for the Houston game.
And guarded and gave Harden
fits in
that game.
Yeah. And that was mid-November. So they had a bit of a tough stretch, but mostly that lineup has been killing bad teams. So we'll see again in the next month, how it stands up to, tougher opponents.
Yes. Well, and Kyle Lowry found his game a little more during that stretch too. And I don't think that's necessarily OG related. Like he kind of figured out his place in how they play a little better. And things are coming together for this team. Like if you look at them on its continuum of this season, there are very few other contending teams that are trying to accomplish as much that's different about how they play than the Raptors, right? They're trying to, this whole experiment, this whole culture change that Masai talked about way back in May was that we're going to change how we play and who we are. And they are actually doing that. And the question was always, okay, when it gets tough, will they revert? And there have been some moments where they've reverted. I think the Golden State game was an example of that.
Loss in Boston without Kyrie.
Loss in Boston without Kyrie. Those are the games, you think about it, what's the common thread there? Those are real teams, right? Like those are the teams you're really trying to beat. So that's the closest we've seen to it getting tough and then going back to pound the ball, let's watch DeMar work. But otherwise, they are establishing what look like habits. And there are guys who are going to fall. Like, I think Norm Powell is obviously, he's had the toughest time of anybody figuring out the transition.
Yeah, he's all in his own head. He doesn't know what he wants to do. He just can't. He's just in his head. You can tell.
It's like watching DeMarre Carroll with his team, right? Where if he didn't get a wide open shot he put the ball on the floor and everyone went, no, right? Like, Norm's all not quite there, but he's in that kind of category. But look at how they're maxing out the guys up and down the roster, the veteran guys and the young guys. And they're all, like, at various times producing. So, again, as an NBA team that doesn't have that guy, it's hard to say what more you can ask for.
No, and Masai Ujiri and Jeff Weltman, who's now in Orlando, they get a lot of credit. They're really well-regarded around the league. But, then there was this sort of counter, like a lot of what made the Raptors good for the past 4 or 5 years was what was already here other than trading Rudy Gay, which you and I could have decided that was the smart move to make given how bad he was here. But all along they were drafting this like ghost team over here of like dudes that wouldn't play because the team was too good. And all of a sudden like that ghost team is real. And who's the highest pick out of that? Pirtle at 9?
Pirtle at 9, then everybody else is in
Powell's the second round pick.
The 20s, except for Bebe, who was 16 and drafted by Boston.
I mean, and look, none of them are going to be stars, but Pirtle's good.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about how good Pirtle is in a second. Anunoby's good. Powell's, for what he is good, and he just got a mid-sized extension that we'll also talk about. Van Vliet was not even drafted, right?
Yeah.
That dude, what a pest that dude is. I would not, if I were posting up anywhere, I would not want to be on Van Vliet because he just digs in and gets steals and bumps people. He's a pest.
I mean, he's not as creative as Lowry, obviously, but you could almost see the Lowry in his game. Like, they both take being posted up by a bigger player as an affront to their manhood.
And Siakam had a sequence against, who the hell did they play the other day? Philly.
Yeah.
Here. Where he leaked out on a fast break, just outran everybody, missed a layup, sprinted all the way back to the other end and got the defensive rebound like 8 seconds later when the Sixers missed, and then leaked out again and something else happened. It's like the guy plays so hard, it's ridiculous.
We haven't even talked about DeLon Wright.
And DeLon Wright, who is, let's step back. How real? So my question is, How real do you think the Raptors' new look revamped offense is? Because it speaks to how low the floor was. Like, where do you think they rank in assist rate right now?
I sort of know, so I'm not going to say.
And I haven't looked in a little while. I would guess middle of the pack at best.
23rd.
Yeah.
So it's not like they've become the Warriors.
No.
They're just not last. So they've assisted
on... Well, they were last by like 2 full percentage points last year, right?
Yeah.
Like they weren't close.
They've assisted on 56% of their baskets. It was 47% last year, 51% the year before. They were last both years. They're throwing 289 passes per game. That's 20th. That was 241 last year, which was 27th. As much, and these are all tied together, but it's as much as the passing is part of the change, it's the number of threes they're taking, which is top 10 after being bottom 10. And sneakily, the one that we haven't talked about, hasn't gotten as much attention, is they're playing fast.
Yeah.
They're a top 10 pace team after being 29th 2 years ago and like 20th last year. And you can see that they're trying to get into stuff early off of miss. Like, I think that's the underrated part. I guess what I'm saying is when I watch the Raptors, it looks different. It does look different. But then there are games where I'm like, hey, it's not like I'm blown away by the reinvention. So I'm just sort of curious, like, how profound do you think this actually is?
I remember opening night, Dwayne Casey says, maybe we have to have two systems. And he almost meant, like, for the starters and the backups. Because the backups were playing this all summer, right? Like, they've been playing this style for Raptors 905.
I think Josh Lewenberg of TSN had a really good story on how the scoring system that they were playing with in Los Angeles was different. Like, you lost a point if you hit a mid-range jumper.
Yeah, right. I think
like
it was James Herbert, unless they both wrote that same story, yeah.
Josh also wrote, both of them just
wonderful
guys.
People, good human beings.
Yes.
But yeah, like, the fact that they're doing this and they're playing faster and they're still defending, like, that's where I like the change. Like, you can't completely change who DeMar is. And DeMar's growth over the last, I want to say, 5 years, it feels like it's been leaps, but it's been incremental every year. It's been a staircase, right? And so now part of the staircase right now is when they played Milwaukee last year and they went into Milwaukee and got blitzed by the Jason Kidd run guys at you defense, which can be beaten if you move the ball. That's what's going to happen to them in the playoffs this year. So every time DeMar takes a dribble and finds somebody and makes a basketball decision that is not about DeMar scoring, it's about the Raptors scoring. That's a positive, right? Are these habits yet? Not quite. But you can see that they have more flexibility than they used to have, which when they got into the playoffs, every time, was there ever a new approach for this team? No, because they only had one way to play.
If you talk to the coaching staff about last year's series against Milwaukee, they'll say they got good looks and like DeMar would make the right initial pass out of the trap. And maybe it didn't happen as quickly as you would like. And that's part of what they're trying to teach, but it was really on the guys who got the ball, whether it was, you know, in sort of the Draymond role in the 4-3 or who got the ball swung to in the corner and missing a three, that were failing a bit in that series. And I think the offensive transformation is just to make everybody a bit quicker and a bit more decisive when they get the ball in those situations. And that's why I think the defining factor of whether this carries over, and it sounds pretty reductive, but can these guys make threes? Can the Raptors bench players, can rotation guys 7 and 8 make threes? Because you've seen how much room they're giving Pascal Siakam, and he's quick enough to beat a lot of guys off the dribble still.
I believe
still.
Pascal Siakam is like 9 of 65 from 3
this year. Like 2 for his last many.
Yeah.
Is DeLon Wright going to be able to hit open threes? He started the year on a terrible run, got injured, and he's been better since then. Is OG Anunoby going to be able to keep it up? And obviously the three isn't the only thing. You also have to make plays when players are closing out on you, but those closeouts only come if you're making the threes initially. So I think that's sort of going to be not the defining, but one of the defining factors in if this transformation can work.
And can DeMar make threes, right? Like, and he's went through that little mini crazy hot streak. One of the things about DeMar that has been interesting this year is he's played really well. Like, he's played the best basketball of his career. And all it makes me think is how good he could still be. Like, if he was a real three-point shooter, if he can be a 34% three-point shooter, 35.
On real volume, which is not just like, oh, I got to take this corner one because I haven't done it in a while and everyone's laughing at me.
Yeah, if it becomes something like when you talked about how he made that pass in the Milwaukee series, the difference between that and what they're trying to do is he had to think what pass to make, right? It was, okay, what do I do now? Oh, it's pass over there. As opposed to it being a reaction.
Yeah.
Right? And with him in threes, it's still not a reaction. It's not an instinct. Because he's not good enough. If he got to the point where he was good enough that you leave me open for three, I'm taking it. And teams have to worry about him. And if he upped his defense another 10%, let's say 10%.
Let's say 20%.
His defense is still, like, he gets blown by all the time.
He's a screen magnet. He dies on screen still. Of all the ways he's gotten better, if he can make those two adjustments, imagine a DeMar DeRozan with his mid-range game, his ability to draw fouls, and a three-point shot and defense. What is he then?
Well, he's an MVP candidate, but, you know, we'll see. It's two more years, so he could just add one of those things each summer, and then he'll be an MVP candidate.
But that's part of the interesting thing about the bench, too, right, is Poeltl's trying to become a stretch 5-4. And Van Vliet still is not a great three-point shooter, especially given that he's a little guy.
Yeah, I think he's a better shooter than he's shown, but, you know, whatever.
He shoots pretty confidently.
You are what you shoot.
His mechanics are there for him to be a good shooter. Like, I'm not sure Pascal Siakam can say the same thing.
Correct.
DeLon Wright is a guy who, with a three-point shot, like, I remember when you wrote about Argentina, Zach, and about how Manu Ginobili, like, he plays in between the rhythm of the game, right? He plays in the space.
Dennis Lindsay says he plays in between dribbles, which was like, when he said that to me, I was like, wow, that's damn good.
It's like in music, the space between the notes, right? Yeah. And DeLon Wright has a little bit of that, right? Like, the ability to just play at a different speed and in a different place than other people. Again, they're developing these guys. It's such a great situation for the Raptors, really. Because as much as maybe they're going to run into Cleveland again, they're going to get killed. What are you trying to do in the NBA, right? Like, the Raptors kind of, to me, the question becomes, what is success, really? Because ever since Michael Jordan, what's the argument? And Magic Johnson and Bill Russell, go back as far as you want. Rings, 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 rings. And Golden State being as good as they are, to me, almost, for some people, it took away some of the joy of the game because you knew they were going to win unless something went really wrong, which is hard, can be hard in sports. So with the Raptors, they're really good. Let's say they win 60 games this year. 60 games, conference final, or second round, 7 games, whatever it is. What's the next step for them? And they have never in their entire franchise history had a better chance to go get a franchise player than they do right now because they have more assets than they've ever had.
Well, that needs to be a mega move then because they've got a gazillion dollars committed to all these dudes.
Yeah, it's
got to
be a trade.
So you're talking about someone like DeRozan goes out the door, or Lowry. I think they'd even have a hard time trading Lowry, honestly, goes out the door.
I'm not too sure about that.
Okay.
If for the right player, I don't think there's such a thing as an untouchable on
this
team.
I don't. I just think, you know, it's $30 million. It's just mechanically.
Oh, yeah.
It's difficult to move. Yes. Lowry's a great player.
I thought you meant in terms of willingness to move.
No. So I think the move is hope LeBron goes to the Western Conference. I think that's the move. But they've been vindicated for standing pat, and the market made it so that it was an easy decision because these became short-term deals instead of long-term 5-year max deals for Lowry and Ibaka. So it's an easy decision, and they're vindicated in the sense that the team is, I think, better than they thought it would be even. Mm-hmm. And the East is all right. It doesn't really have anything to do with the East. It's just they're better. Whether they can beat LeBron or compete with LeBron, I mean, I don't really, who knows, but they would be.
And I think that's the question to what success this year is. Mm-hmm. They don't have to beat the Cavs, but they have to not have – if they run into the Cavs, they have to not have a joke of a six-game series or a sweep.
You this know? Team like, is an accident. It's an accident from ground zero, yep. which is they almost traded Kyle Lowry and they traded Rudy Gay to tank. And they've – to their credit, they've admitted all of that. So this is all an accident. And sometimes you don't have a choice in real life sports. Like sometimes sometimes your team is good and the ages of the players are such that they're going to stay good, and going from good to great is very difficult when you don't have a top 10 player. And Kyle has flirted
yes.
with being a top 10 player. He probably topped out at like 11th. But
there's a problem with that even. Like he's a top 10 regular season player right. at times. And the difference in the playoffs is you have to have the extra ability, again, that no one can stop you, right? Like the physical ability, the size, the speed, the skill, whatever it is, he doesn't have that extra gear that the true superstars have, right?
So let's pose the question then. If you get to February and you think your team is good, but just good, and you've got I did this yesterday. You have $124 million tied up next season. You're over the tax already, and you only have 10 guys on the roster for next season. Van mm-hmm. Vliet's a free agent. What can you do? And my leading – I don't know that DeRozan and Lowry are ever going to be on the table. You seem to think maybe they could be at some point. I tend to agree with you that they could be. But let's pose the easiest question, which is that Poeltl is good. Poeltl in some aspects of the game is better than Valanciunas now, and it's yeah. not close. In yeah. other aspects, Valanciunas is better. But if you told me that in April in a playoff series, Dwayne is going to trust Poeltl down the stretch more than Valanciunas, I'd be like, oh, that makes sense.
They see a tiny bit of Marc Gasol in Jakob Poeltl.
Let's hit the brakes on that one.
You don't mess with Zach regarding Marc Gasol.
Although Marc Gasol can't make a freaking shot right now. 4 of 16 last night, just missing everything. Hey everyone, if you know anything about the host of this podcast, it's that I value my time very heavily, and anything that can make my life easier and faster is of value, which is why the only way I buy tickets to anything is to use SeatGeek. Buying tickets used to stress me out. Am I looking at all the right sites? Did I forget to look at that site? Oh my God, am I going to get a good deal, a bad deal? SeatGeek solves all that. It collates the entire secondary market of tickets into one place. It has an easy-to-use, color-coded system that tells you what's a good buy, what's an undermarket buy, what's an overpay, all of that. Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. It's the holiday season. Maybe you forgot to give somebody a gift. Maybe you got to do it late and make it really special. So buy them a ticket on SeatGeek to something good. And best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. That could be a large percentage of a particular ticket. $20 off. All you have to do is download the SeatGeek app. Enter promo code LOW, L-O-W-E, that's my last name, promo code LOW, like this podcast, and you get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase, so go ahead and do that now. So if you think Poeltl's good, mm-hmm. and maybe better than Valanciunas, and you have $124 million tied up next year, including Valanciunas, would you not try to see what Valanciunas plus Van Vliet okay, because he's a free agent, yeah. and maybe Wright makes him redundant, plus something, a lottery-protected first, which hurts because they've already dealt their pick to the mm-hmm. Nets, or so like yeah. a 2 years away pick. Would you go all in to get a DJ or a Cousins, should he become available? Cousins is a big culture change. I don't see them ever doing that. Mm-hmm. Is there an all-in move out there that's literally just a rental? Like, we'll just do this to get out from under the tax, to get out from under Valanciunas' contract. We won't have any illusions about re-signing this player because we already have too much money guaranteed. I just don't know what the move is.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about, yeah. like, DJ makes sense in certain ways. But do you want to, when you lose Lowry and you lose Ibaka in 2020, do you also not want to have a draft pick? Like,
no, these are hard decisions.
Yeah, so I don't know what the move is. Like, if, you know, you can, I just don't see it.
Because it's easy to say yeah. monetize Valanciunas. Valanciunas
but
alone
there's
is not
much value there.
Not getting any. Yeah.
Okay, so there's different ways to look at this. Okay, so if you're the Raptors, you have a window within, let's say, about this year and next year. Where you have all these guys except for Van Vliet and like most of these guys under contract, and let's say one of the guys comes up
and Bruno,
yes,
Oh boy, Bruno.
Let's not get into that.
The ultimate. That was the end of this podcast. It says right here, Bruno, the ultimate X factor. I wanted 12 minutes of Bruno talk.
But let's say, like, if you're trying to get to the next level, there are different types of the next level. Like DeMarcus Cousins, I don't know. DeMar and Kyle played with him on the Olympic team.
I just don't think you can bring that guy in halfway through a season. I just don't think you can do it.
You have to have such a strong culture to absorb that personality. You need to have a bulletproof culture, and I don't think they think they have that. I don't think they think they have the ability to calm DeMarcus Cousins and channel him in the right direction. But let's say a year from now, one of the guys you might really want comes up. Like, it's probably unlikely, but are you saving your assets for if a real franchise changer comes? A version of Kyrie, right? Like, a guy who can really blossom in your environment. Or are you willing to move some guys for what's a lesser upgrade, right? It's a matter of going all in later and you may never get the chance, or just making a smaller bet now. Like, I think they can wait out this season and move a contract in the summer the same way they did last year with Damari Carroll, right? If they need to do that, they can find a way to do that.
It's going to be harder this summer. It's going to be harder. Might cost them more because there's just not a lot of space.
That's the issue. But I think that's something they'd be willing to risk versus a more uncertain move now.
And they could also go into the tax next year because they haven't been in it yet.
I keep hearing these bold proclamations about how MLSU will go into the tax. And look, the Maple Leafs print money. Like, they sacrificed a first-round pick to get out. That's an act of – that's a mandate. When you do that, you have a mandate for this particular team in 17-18, you're not going over the tax.
I just would not be surprised. Like, they want to avoid being, you know, a repeater team. But if they see – Lowry and Ibaka coming up and they know there's going to be this sort of salary structure reset to some extent, I wouldn't be surprised. And I could be wrong because they haven't done it yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if they said, okay, we'll go into the tax to a small level. But that remains to be seen, and they haven't shown
My understanding was that there was a willingness at the board level to do it if necessary. But they weren't convinced that last year's team was that team. And until they do it, they haven't done it. But this is an organization.
That's a bit of a catch-22.
Exactly. You know. But give MLSE credit. They have been willing to spend money in 100 different ways.
Oh, yeah. No, it's true. That practice facility with the war room is, like, ridiculous. That tricked-out war room costs more than some people's houses. Like, that thing is ridiculous.
They got a D and then G League team. Like, they've spent a ton of money investing in all of their properties. Like, this is an organization that does spend money. So, but when is it worth it? And again, it comes down to the nature of success. Like, is it worth being a tax team if you're going to win 60 games and go out in the second round in 7? I'm not sure whether that's the case or not. Again, this Raptors team, they've assembled all this talent. Now, what do you do with it? There's a ceiling to what they can accomplish on the court unless LeBron leaves the East.
They also have things to try. It's going to be hard for them to get there because Poeltl has been so good. But last night there was a segment of the game where they went Siakam, Anunoby, Ibaka, with Ibaka at center. Mm-hmm. Like, they just look fast and dynamic and athletic. And Anunoby has played some four over the last couple weeks. And when I first saw him play in the league, I thought, well, he's going to be a four. And I don't know what the future of their team is. This there is a future version of the Raptors over the next 2 years somewhere where Anunoby is the four and Ibaka is the five, and that's just how they start and finish games. Which just raises more questions about Valanciunas. Like, I think there's still untapped, like, iterations of this team that we barely know.
Well, we haven't seen a lot of CJ Miles with, with anybody, but at the four, let's say, next to Ibaka, in like an all offense lineup.
And I see that's the kind of lineup where I just think the ceiling is just not going to be hit. Defensively, it's going to be so bad.
Maybe not.
Because the Pacers tried him at the four, and it was tough tobogganing.
Well, and then it's tough if you're playing Siakam in a playoff series. No one's going to guard him, right? Like, I like to play the game where I stick my favorite athletes into like the decathlon, right? And I'll put Pascal Siakam in a decathlon.
Can you name the 10 events in a decathlon right now?
I don't think I can name all 10.
Let's see if collectively we can do it. Javelin,
100-meter hurdles.
100-meter hurdles. Okay. 100-meter dash?
100, no, no, I think it's 100-meter hurdles.
But maybe, is there not both?
High 400 jump? Meters.
Yeah, there's a long race, yeah. 400 meters.
High I think jump, there's a longer vault. Race than that, no?
High jump, pole vault. Do you throw a discus in that thing?
I believe you do. Or,
we're going to fail so badly.
Or is
we're
it shot not going to do
shot put. Maybe it's shot. You throw put? Something. You just say
well,
throw
we've
something.
We've said javelin, though.
You throw, you throw a either, smaller
it's,
thing.
It, we said, it's, there's definitely javelin, and there may, it's one of either shot put or discus, or is it both? You got to get to 10. That's a lot of events. I've never covered a decathlon.
Triple jump?
There, I think there is a
why
triple
is
jump
the triple,
in
triple
there.
Jump a
that's
thing?
Stupid.
Because at some point, like, Wilt Chamberlain was a great triple jumper, right?
Well,
like,
Wilt Chamberlain could have been great at anything.
Yeah,
but like, yes, he,
but
was
he,
a great,
did
he was a great triple jump.
Very important to hop, skip,
I mean,
and
pole
jump
vault,
in your
you,
daily
you
life.
Watch it and you're like, that looks fun. I would do that thing.
Well, and that's where if you start, and we could have a whole.
Did we name
do,
long we, jump?
We, long no. jump, yeah. We could do a whole podcast on, I used to argue this with people. Take the best athletes from the best sports and put them in a decathlon and who's the best at it. And LeBron James is never getting over a pole vault. It's just not happening.
He's too big?
He's 270 pounds. Good luck with that.
Like, see, I don't know the mechanics of that. That's a disadvantage.
Snap, you're going to snap your pole vault, right? Like, you just can't be that big. And hurdles would be tough for a guy that size, right? Like
those hurdles are high, man. Woo.
Yeah, but there's not a lot of space between them necessarily, right? Like,
no, what I'm saying is I don't think I could even get over one hurdle if you gave me as much of a running start as you want. I don't think I could clear one.
Yeah, I think my number one pick in this event, I think, was Russell Westbrook about a year ago. I don't know. I'd have to look again, but he might be my guy.
You might throw the shot put in one of the competitors' faces. yeah, so I, you know, Anunoby at the 4, Ibaka at the 5. Is well, very interesting to me. And Ibaka, I just don't know how we're going to – I just don't know how that's going to be a thing. Maybe it's just matchup specific in the playoffs or something. But I like the look of that. And then it just raises the question, well, then who's the 3? Because Anunoby has answered that question. If you ship him to 4, then you've just reopened it.
It could be DeLon or – I mean, not that he's playing 3,
no,
but DeRozan
been,
goes to the 3 or whatever.
They've been playing Lowry, yeah. DeRozan, and Wright all together. Yeah. And that lineup has been very good.
Wright can –
right guard and Simmons.
So many players. He blocked, not that it's like the greatest feat anymore, but he blocked Dirk, like, he blocked Dirk last night, and he blocked another one of their bigger players. He blocked Harrison Barnes last night as well. It's just awesome. I don't know how opponents complete passes when Pascal Siakam and DeLon Wright are on the floor together.
Well, and Masai's always liked athletic teams. Like, that's kind of what he built when he was running Denver, is an athletic team that could run and attack the rim. And this Raptors team finally looks a little more like that. Yeah. He's got enough guys. And you can see what he's done is he's tried to go for lottery ticket guys who might be, like, if Pascal Siakam can shoot, awesome. If DeLon Wright can shoot, awesome. Again, it was the same thing we've been talking about. They all have this room to grow. But the other thing is, if you want to sell and buy something, then all these guys, you now have a body of work that people can look at and say, what would DeLon Wright do for me? What would Pascal Siakam do for me? These guys have some asset currency.
Yeah, you just need to find the right deal because you run into this a lot, which is like they just asset-wise, no one can compete with Boston still. Yeah, yeah. And if anyone can, it's Philly. And Phoenix is lurking with a bunch of young guys and 2 first-round picks from Miami. Like those are the 3, and I'm probably forgetting one that are sort of like if you're going to beat somebody, barring – some unforeseen circumstance where a star player is proactively traded for another star, you're just going to need the market to break for you in such a way as like, well, all these teams aren't interested for whatever reason, or this isn't a fit, or they're afraid he's not going to re-sign, something like that.
Or you need a guy who is driving his own trade situation and wants to go to Toronto.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, that's
a first time for everything.
You know, but the one thing I will say about that, you're right, it's never happened. But the one thing you can say is, of all the ways that Masai Ujiri has built this franchise, and all the, like, ways big and little, in terms of the practice facility and the D-League team, and, can I swear on this podcast?
Yes.
Brooklyn. Like, that was designed to get attention. It was designed to say, look at us, we exist and we matter. And that's how the Raptors have gradually been building themselves up, to the point where you look around the league, and if you're a player, you can look at Toronto plausibly and say, that's not the worst place to go. And maybe even better
whoa,
than that.
Whoa.
But look,
that's a slogan.
Like, but this
north
is
over everything, that's not the worst place to go.
But of the places you can go, if you have enough assets, this is another part of make, if they ever were to get in a situation where they could make this kind of deal, they have enough assets that they could move assets that the other team might enjoy and still have guys left over to compete, right? Like, yeah. That's kind of what you want. That's your sweet spot. Except it's going to expire at some point.
Yep.
And because guys get older, the salary.
And I think they're fine with that. I think if what happens is for the next 2+ seasons, the Raptors are a 50-58 win team. That is a big range, but let's say injuries and you hit everything, whatever, 50-58 wins. You lose in the second round. You lose in the second round. Maybe you get blitzed in the conference finals one year. Everyone leaves. You've got the young guys. You don't tear it all down because the young guys are decent by then, but you get a couple of good draft picks and you go into the next phase of franchise building when the Celtics are peaking and the Sixers, if they hit, are peaking and Giannis is peaking and you sort of just ride that out for three. I think they'd be fine with that.
Yeah. I think we don't often think of them like this, but Masai Ujiri is kind of conservative when it comes to asset management and trades. And that's not to say he's not doing very smart things around the edges, but you know, we blow off a DeMarcus Cousins trade because he wouldn't take that risk. But saying that, that might be the only scenario in which they can win a quote unquote bidding war for a difference maker, is to get a flawed or questionable asset in return. That's how New Orleans got DeMarcus Cousins. There just wasn't a bidding war for him. But I don't think Masai Ujiri is the type to risk the foundation of what he's built for something that, I mean, everything might or might not work, but something that he can't put a lot of certainty behind.
Yeah, the backup plan for this year, if Kyle had signed in Minnesota, let's say that Minnesota wanted Kyle Lowry instead of Jeff Teague. Kyle was trying to work that on the Friday night before free agency opened.
Have you written that before?
I think I did say that, yeah.
Okay, I gotta find that.
They
are represented by the same now former agent, Jeff Teague and Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
And that played into what happened in Minnesota for sure.
And they weren't excited about him in Minnesota or San Antonio or anywhere. But if he had found another home, then they were gonna go with the young guys. And your starting lineup would have been the young guys, and they would have figured out another way to do it. And that's always been in their back pocket.
But that back pocket is, if DeRozan's here, DeRozan plus young guys is going to win you just enough games to be where you don't want to be, where Masai does not want to be.
And that's where the conservatism comes in, is I think if you go down that road, you're right, you have to move DeMar DeRozan, which is difficult for a number of reasons, not the least of which is that he's really established himself as someone people love in this town. Like,
he's on pace to be the all-time Raptor.
He's
right. It's Vince always, despite the exit, but what he just meant to the franchise in its infancy is unrivaled. But DeRozan is going to pass him as the all-time Raptor.
Yeah,
if he hasn't already.
Through longevity and growth and, you know.
He's a nice hardworking dude,
contract.
Too.
Yeah.
the way he talks about Toronto, too, right?
Yeah.
Like, the way he loves this city and the franchise, and he tells you all about it. So if you were going down that road, you would have had to potentially move him. And I don't think Masai thought about it, but he wasn't willing to go there unless he had to go there. And I think it's been smart to not go there. Like, you've got a good team that's entertaining, that's still growing, that's still developing guys. But at some point, the decisions are going to come back, and those kind of defining decisions are going to come back. Because Kyle's got 2 years left on his deal after this year, Ibaka the same. Those are big decisions. And so the NBA never stops moving. It keeps rolling and rolling and rolling and rolling and rolling. This Raptors team, if let's say, pick a name. If Anthony Davis decided, I want to go somewhere else, and everyone goes for him, what can Toronto, Toronto can take a swing, and maybe they don't get him.
They probably don't.
They would not get him.
Probably not. But like,
they would not get him unless, as you said before, for some whatever reason.
Unless he wanted to be.
He's like, I want to go. I like the hockey. I like the tobogganing. I'm in. Like, I want to be there. Or I like Kyle or whatever it is, you know?
And that's where Masai building his rep and the franchise's rep is, that's kind of what it's a bet on to a degree. Is, you know me. You know how we do things. This is worth trying.
I'll tell you what I want to see. I want to see Toronto, Boston, 2-3 in the second round. That's the series I feel like we haven't seen at all. We haven't. I don't feel like it. We have not seen it.
No.
And I just, I, Let me put off Cleveland for another round for both of those teams. Although we saw Boston Cleveland in the conference finals last year.
Then you get to see the Wizards beat the Cavs like they're always saying they're going to.
You know, it's funny. People laugh at the Wizards. It's gotten to the point where they laugh at, I think the Wizards are good. And I think when they put it all together, now the question is, will they put it all together? But I think those guys are good. And people laugh at, you know, I heard Doris Burke, my friend and brilliant colleague, said this on Christmas. You know, Washington, we're waiting for Washington to get out of the conference semifinals. I'm like, I hate to disagree with Doris, but like, I'm not sure that I ever saw a Wizards team. I'm like, they should be in the conference finals. No brainer. Like, it's a disappointment that they're not. Now, maybe they should have beat the limping Isaiah Thomases last year, but they didn't. It was a tough 7-game series. But I keep going back, like, if John Wall doesn't hurt his wrist in 2015, they might beat the 60-win Hawks in the second round. Mm-hmm. A series, like, Wall and Beal have been good in the playoffs every year. They step, they're the anti-Lowry and DeRozan. Like, those guys play as if it's no fear, it's just another game, they raise their level, like,
I saw them sweep the Raptors.
That was the series where it's amazing that the Raptors stayed intact after that series, because that was, now Kyle was hurting in that series as he often is.
But I mean, he was, but he still was also really bad.
But that series was a straight up humiliation of everyone top to bottom in the organization. I couldn't believe Dwayne survived. I couldn't believe that there was largely no changes to the player, but it was shocking to me.
The practice between game 3 and game 4 of that series is the weirdest practice I've ever covered.
You could tell they know it's over?
Yeah. It was dark. It was my type of practice.
But that's... But that happened a little bit with Cleveland last year, too. I mean, granted, it's Cleveland versus Washington.
It was just less embarrassing last year.
But Kyle gets hurt, and there was friction within the organization over how hurt Kyle was with that ankle. There was legitimate, like, anger from some people. They thought he should have played. But it was the same kind of thing where that was another point at which point Masai could have said, enough of this. We are not going anywhere. And because they've had those moments in the playoffs more often than they've had the good ones.
And that's why, to their credit, the culture reset press conference is an all-time moment. Well, not an all-time, but like it's a flashbulb moment for anyone who cares about basketball here.
There's not that many all-time moments in Raptors history.
There really is. One of them is the inflatable Raptor falling down the stairs and deflating in the middle of a game. When he said that, I think everyone's natural first reaction on Twitter, seeing it, or you were probably there in person. Yeah. At least, like, well, is Dwayne going to get fired
today? I mean,
today?
That's what I wrote. I wrote it'd be difficult. I didn't go all in because I never go all in. But I thought it'd be difficult for him to return. Like, you say culture reset. What does that mean?
I've had that exact thought, I want to say, 3 different times where I went, I would bet that Dwayne is going to go.
Well, I had Dwayne on my podcast on Friday, and I said to him, dude, this is your 7th year on the Raptors. 7th. Ain't no one thought he was going to get to 7 years. But not one person.
I've had multiple moments.
Not Dwayne.
There have been multiple moments where I bet if you gave Dwayne truth serum, he would say, yeah, I thought I was going to get fired.
Yeah, I'm just speculating. I'm sure Dwayne has thought, you know, that's it for me. Like, yep. I just, you know, it's crazy he's lasted here.
And that's where Masai, I always think of Masai, this is a silly analogy, but I always think of Masai.
Still time to stop.
It's too late. as like, you know how seagulls sit up on the wind, right? And they wait and they wait and they wait and they see food and they go after it. That's what Masai is like a
lot.
You
mean they're hovering.
Yeah, they spend a lot. He spends a lot of time waiting, right? Like waiting and waiting. And look at his history in Denver. Nobody made more 3 and 4 team deals than Masai Ujiri. Like he was involved in a ton of multiple team deals. He was really creative. When he swings, when he's sure, he goes for it. He hasn't had that moment in Toronto. And so the natural inclination has been, let's hold it together. Hold it together after the Washington disaster. Hold it together after they ground their way through those 2 and into the 3rd round.
It was the worst, the least inspiring conference finals appearance in NBA history.
They were never in that series. Before game 6, I sat on the bench and I turned to Luis Scola and I went, Luis, you guys won 2 here. They won 2 there. They won again in game 5 in Cleveland. What's going to happen tonight? He went, we're not taking this very serious in game 3.
Did you say that really?
Yeah.
Luis is the best.
And then he looked at the scoreboard and he goes, tonight will be hard. And they got destroyed, right? And
forever, but a 6-game series, which like the total point differential was like 100 points or something. Like, it wasn't close. I don't know what it was, but it wasn't close.
Well, and to review for people who forgot, they're on the way there was the 7-gamer against Indiana, which
they should have lost.
Which was pulled from the jaws of defeat.
CJ Miles actually missed 2 free throws during that comeback.
I think it was Rodney Stuckey, no?
Oh, no, sorry, CJ Miles dribbled out of bounds. Dribbled out of bounds with nobody near him.
Yeah, just that was Drake laughing.
Get out of Rodney
Stuckey. CJ had a really bad moment in there somewhere.
Probably.
They all did.
And then the seven gamer against Miami where both Whiteside and Valanciunas
got
it. But it got off, it was the most unwatchable series ever, but it got off, there was like a brief moment where it was going to be clash of the old school 7-foot dinosaurs, and then they both got hurt.
The Kyle Lowry 75 footer that will be forgotten by every NBA fan because they just got killed in overtime.
I forgot it right now.
One of the craziest things I've ever seen. It forced overtime.
Oh, yes.
Kyle had a great game 7, if I recall.
Yeah, he was awesome in the Miami series.
He was awesome in the last two games. Was an awful playoff run. It really was. Like, they did what they could and they beat who was in front of them, but that was awful. And then the Cleveland disaster in the second round last year, like, there have been moments where Masai could have, he has enough political currency to do whatever
he
wants.
Like,
he is the Pat Riley of this organization.
Almost whatever he wants.
He's fine. But he's waiting for the moment that he has a chance to do something big. And again, he's got assets lined up that if that opportunity arose, he thinks if he gets in a room with a real free agent, or if he thinks if he gets into the head of a real free agent, he can convince him to come here. It just hasn't happened yet. So it becomes a matter of what is success.
And that's why keeping it together, 55-win teams do not grow on trees.
No. Nope.
As to people in Sacramento and Minnesota and Orlando and the Knicks and, you know, Charlotte and on and on and on and on.
Atlanta.
Atlanta had a 60-win team not long ago. The Lakers, on and on. Like,
there are many bad teams.
People like to dismiss the Raptors because they're the cute little engine that could, and their star players have been bad in the playoffs. Call it like it is. Kyle and DeMar have been bad.
Yep.
If there's anything encouraging from Cleveland last year is that Kyle was actually good in that series before he got hurt. He played without fear. I think he shot it all right. Like, he was good Kyle Lowry, active, engaged, moving around all the time, Kyle Lowry. It's easy to dismiss the Raptors. They're in Toronto. It's cold and, you know, they have the crowd in Maple Leaf Square. Oh, look how excited they are for a first round game. And then they lose to Cleveland. You know what? A lot of franchises in the NBA would love to be the Toronto Raptors right now. And we'll see how they get through these next 10, 12 games we outlined and where they are at the end of the season. But this is a damn good team and Cleveland doesn't fear anybody, nor should they. I would not be scared if I were Cleveland of anyone. But if you're Washington and you're Boston and you think you're just going to roll over the Raptors, I don't see why the Raptors aren't favored in either of those series.
The one thing is the thing Kareem brought up is they have enough non-shooters who are contributors in the regular season that like the whole point of Kyle and DeMar using their teammates better is the teammates have to make shots. And that'd be the one thing is teams shorten up the rotation. The benches that this bench has kind of beaten the life out of the regular season
won't
be there. Those bench minutes won't be there. And again, the two moments that they've reverted were when they were playing teams they were scared of or at least really worried about.
And I think you guys both nailed it. Like the issue is going to be, and Boston will face some of this issue too. Like you'll get back to the playoffs and people will not guard Marcus Smart. And not only that, people will say, okay, Marcus Morris, let's see it.
Mm-hmm.
Jaylen Brown, let's see if it's real. Let's see if it's real on this stage now. And Boston lost some shooting off of last year's team, and they'll be tested in the same way. But that's going to be that, and just the only difference between Toronto and everyone else, and it's a big one, is that Kyle and DeMar shit the bed in half their playoff games every year. And if that happens again, they can't win. I mean, it's that simple. Like those guys just have to play better.
And again, the issue with Kyle is partly that physically he can't dominate anybody, and then mentally, I've always thought when they get to the playoffs, Kyle doesn't fully believe in himself. Because he remember
or his
where,
team.
Remember, yeah, and well, one than the other. Yeah. Sometimes the chicken and the egg. But remember where he came from, right? He was not an all-star level player until very late in his life, in his basketball life. He was an extra guy who lost starting competition after starting competition. Kareem still wrote the best piece on on Kyle about how he just doesn't trust people. He never has his whole life, and it defines who he is. And when things break down in the playoffs and they go badly, what do you want from your best player? You got to look at him, and you know he's going to bring it. And the Raptors have never been able to look at Kyle and know that. And then DeMar, remember who DeMar was, too. DeMar was a guy for the first 4 years of his career, did not measurably improve. And then the wheels caught, and he figured out to be, he got to the point where he is what he is, but he can be taken advantage of defensively. And offensively, he still hasn't got as varied a game. If he's making twos against Cleveland.
Well, you mentioned Wes Matthews last night. I mean, you saw it. People are going to go under every pick still. Like, the regular season, is people just play their defense. They treat you like everyone else. They go over. Last night, Dallas went under everything. So you go ahead and shoot it. Like, and you want to take it, go around the screen one way and come back so you're in your 20-foot sweet spot. It's fine. We don't care. Shoot it. Like, he's going to get that treatment again.
Yeah. And that's the
issue. That's a good coach, right?
And you can look at the Raptors, and I love watching them this year. Like, they're such a fun team. They have all these interesting pieces that play different ways. Like, it's really, what they've built is a really, really good team that's interesting and has promise for the future and has currency for now. And I still think you can look at this team and go, here's what's going to happen in all likelihood in the playoffs, is the non-shooters won't be able to shoot and your stars won't be able to be superstars. And without those two things, like, what is this Raptors team really?
But there's just enough doubt now because of the way they're playing that you can genuinely look toward April and May and say, what if?
Maybe.
And that's, it's different.
So they're interesting over the next 2-3 weeks because of that schedule, and they're going to be interesting then to see how they look when they face an opponent that gears up to play them like the same, as if they're the same old Raptors. Mm-hmm. But at some point, I agree with you, and we'll wrap in a second, like, Kyle and DeMar have underperformed so badly in the playoffs relative to their base level, which is very good. But there's been all those stats made the rounds on Twitter last year about the two worst shooters and this and that. At some point, there are enough playoff games where you just have to conclude something is going on upstairs that isn't working for those guys. And like, even LeBron is going to have 7-for-21 games in the playoffs, but he's going to rebound, he's going to defend, he's going to pass. Like, DeMar was 0-for-8 in a playoff game, but 0-of-8? Like, that can't happen.
Does he only take 8 shots?
Yeah. Like, zero.
But
and the difference,
8 is almost as shocking.
The difference is LeBron could go 3-for-30, and the next game he's still LeBron James. And he knows it, and they know it. And these guys, it's much more likely to be, oh no, not again.
And Kyle impacts the game in so many ways. And even when he's going through shooting slumps in regular seasons, you're like, oh, look at that thing he did. Look at that thing he did. Look how he took a ball away. Look how he got a loose ball. Look how he got an offensive rebound. There are games in the playoffs where that hasn't been the bad shooting Lowry. It's been the spectator strong, but the confused
inactive
Lowry. And you can't do that. You can't have that from your two best players. So we will see.
Oh, and again, it comes with Kyle. I think with these guys, so much of basketball players, you can trace a lot of who they are, right? And you can see it. There's some basketball players, you know who they are by watching them. Like, you know almost everything you need to know about Kobe Bryant by watching him play basketball, right? With these guys, they came from very different places. They are still proving to themselves and to the world who they are. And you can only prove so much in the regular season. That's just what it is, because the playoffs are a different beast and they have never fully mastered.
Well, in about 8 months, we'll all be able to watch the playoffs and, whenever it is in this interminable NBA season. But, guys, we got to wrap. It's been wonderful having you. Hopefully we will, imbibe at one of the many Firkin establishments here in Toronto and watch a game in the next couple of nights.
We haven't talked about tobogganing.
I didn't know it was. I thought a toboggan was a specific kind of sled, and you went sledding on a toboggan. You're just saying you just toboggan.
A toboggan is whatever you want it to
be. I thought the toboggan is the long sled that curls up in the front, and multiple people can get on it like a roller coaster kind of, and like then you sled down the hill.
See, I'm not even sure you're wrong. You're wrong, because I genuinely don't know. I've always called it tobogganing. But I wonder if it's like my third year copy editing teacher would always get mad when you would say hosting, because you play host or you play host to somebody. You did not
you
host.
Don't, you know, you
host is a verb, is
you,
a noun.
You know what you don't do? You don't entertain people. when someone says, oh, I love this room is great for entertaining, I want to punch them in their face.
Are you going to juggle?
This room is wonderful for entertaining. Even when you're on like the inflatable circle thing, you're still tobogganing?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, that's tubing. If you have the tube.
Okay, you're tubing. Yeah.
Tubing
okay.
is actually
if I'm
a
on my
different.
Lunch tray from college, yeah, about, I'm tobogganing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to bring up like the flat plastic circle thing.
Oh,
I don't know what they're called.
Oh, yeah. No, I've got yeah. So we've got one of the discs. We've got three long ones that are like boat-like or kind of like that. We've got a magic carpet still. The magic carpet, like my six-year-old loves the magic carpet. The problem with the magic carpet is you turn sideways, catch an edge, and you go down hard.
Okay.
And then we've got...
Makes it tough.
We've got two like baby sleds, the ones that you can kind of pull behind you.
Yeah.
But those actually go like a rocket down a hill. And then we've got one of those ones that's like almost
like
you just
called them a sled.
Yeah.
You just said sled.
But when you get on the hill, you're tobogganing.
This is really a big adjustment. Every time I come to Canada, I learn something.
I'm telling you
about
man.
Something.
It's a magical country.
Boxing Day, Canadian Thanksgiving, tobogganing.
Did you get in on those Boxing Day sales?
We did not. Did not get in on the Boxing Day sales at World Juniors.
You guys don't have Boxing Day?
No.
No, we have the day after Christmas.
They perfected Thanksgiving though, so that's fine.
I drove to Buffalo yesterday and the biggest problem I had was there was a traffic slowdown whenever people had to exit to a roadside mall. Like that's how long the lines were. The cars were backed up onto the highway and it would create like a 10-mile backup.
I haven't been outside in 3 days. This is the first time I've been outside since the Raptors game, I think. All right. Well, guys, we'll see y'all soon. Bruce Arthur, Eric Carine, read them at the Toronto Star and the Athletic, respectively. They are among the very best in the business and always enjoy talking some Toronto basketball. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, you. Zach.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.